Primary election is over.
Gay Valmont is joining us now. Hey, Gay, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I know you're going to be representing the Democratic side for Congress District 1.
News Radio 92.3, full team coverage with Chris and Austin, provided up-to-the-minute election results.
Joining me now, Jimmy Patronis. Hey, Jimmy, how you doing?
I couldn't be any better right now.
I'm looking at your numbers. You have 59.12% of the vote.
News Radio 92.3. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
I think these cameras, the license plate readers, I think it's out of control. And this is something that in Florida, you know, our highway patrol, we have readers for like tolling by plate and things like that. Now, I've never supported the automatic tickets being sent if you're speeding. I think a human being has to do that. And so I've never embraced that.
Governor DeSantis yesterday doing a press conference at FIU and getting asked at the end a lot of different questions, including one of the first questions he was asked was about the grand jury report, which I do not think the story had been released yet when he was asked this question. This is about like 10 a.m. yesterday, and a reporter asked him, and I was like, well, that's kind of out of the blue again. I mean, yes, we all know that, you know, what was done was wrong. What was done was, as Alex Andrade has always called it, you know, wire fraud and money laundering, that the $10 million should have gone into the state Medicare fund and or Medicaid fund, and it did not, and it went instead to these two political PACs. But, you know, it's sort of baked into the cake at this point. Uthmeyer did wrong. DeSantis did wrong. And, you know, the people who were governing the everybody involved, Hope Florida Foundation Board, like everybody involved in this, either covered it up or did wrong or tried to come forward and got punished for it. And people who raised questions about it got punished by DeSantis for it. We got local projects vetoed by the governor because Alex Andrade kept making an issue about this inappropriate, unethical, I would say illegal, although they're not going to prosecute behavior. And then the grand jury report comes out later, and then I'm like, but I haven't had a chance to see it because I haven't had a chance to read the report. I just saw the Channel 3 report on it last night, but that was this morning. So don't worry, I'll get to it. But I suspect, here's my short version of this. I suspect, based on what Bob Salarsky said last night, that pretty much everything that's in the grand jury report is everything that we have already told you many, many, many times. And essentially, the grand jury decided that they didn't believe a case could be made enough to prove a criminal violation. And so even though all the facts are known, and DeSantis has, and Uthmeyer have denied it ever since, it just is, and there's nothing you can do about it, and so tough, you know, which is a really, really, really crummy and disappointing answer to finding out that people broke the law, but you can't prove it, so what do you do? But anyway, that was one of the first questions that was asked, and DeSantis just blew it off, and I didn't really think anything of it because I'm like, well, that's random, since that's kind of a dead story at this point. But again, the person asking was probably the CBS affiliate, reporter, and then they put that into their story. But there were other things the governor was asked about, which were also very, very, so, you know, we'll get to that later. But there are other things that were asked about that were very interesting, including the flock camera question, which, you know, obviously has been covered extensively here locally. And I had said, yesterday, maybe the day before, I would be very surprised because in Alabama, there's a legislator that is intending to file a bill to restrict flock camera use in their state. And I said, I would be very surprised if this is not a key focal question in the legislature coming up this next March, because it's not an election year. But I would be very surprised if we don't have a lot of conversation about this in Tallahassee next year. Well, lo and behold, the governor basically said, yeah, something needs to be done about this. At the very least, we need to look into it seriously because, as he said, it's out of control.
But and so this was something that was kind of out there in that vein. And then with this whole flock situation, it's now being used not for tolling by plate or things like that, but for actual criminal surveillance. And so these are done by police departments and sheriff's departments by and large. I've asked for an overview of what's going on in state agencies. There are some, but it's a lot smaller than what we have at the local level.
Yeah, and that's part of the issue is the disparity between who's overseeing these things widely used by local agencies like our Escambia County Sheriff's Office and our Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office and our Pensacola Police Department. And I'm sure Gulf Breeze has them, too. I just can't remember now if they're the one that's come out and said specifically that they have them. I'd be very surprised if, you know, they're not a part of all of this. But he says what I have said, which is, I support law enforcement. I want to fight crime, but I don't want to live in a police state either. I mean, we love the police, but we don't live in a police state, right?
I'm all about having law enforcement have tools to be able to hold criminals accountable. I think that's important that we do that. And no one's been stronger on law enforcement than me. But I don't want to have this become a surveillance state. I don't want there to be a situation. And that's why we wanted an AI Bill of Rights. Remember, we were pushing for that. Because the flock is artificial intelligence.
And I don't think the AI part of this is really the issue. Now, I know if you're against data centers and you're against AI and you're against flock and you're against the police, it's a very easy thing for you, for the socialists, to just kind of be against everything. You know, for those who want to defund the police, it's easy to take away a police tool that's very effective. It's easy to be against the AI. It's easy to be against all of the stuff. I happen to be very, very hostile to AI because I see all kinds of dangers connected to it. And, you know, but I'm very pro-police. I think data centers might well be extremely useful for the future. But I have great concerns about the license plate readers, you know, because of what I think of as the, it's not a warrant, it's not a search, it's not a violation of your privacy, but I do think it creates an environment within which the ability to move freely about and remain unknown to the government. Which I know sounds like a pretty weak formulation, but it's something we've taken for granted for so long that literally if you're not doing anything wrong, the government shouldn't know very much about you, that that's part of what it means to be a private citizen in the United States. And here we are, you do nothing wrong and the government knows an awful lot about you, potentially. That's a problem. So we're going to have this big conversation, I'm sure of it, over the next year, at least until the legislature finishes what it's doing, over to what degree we're comfortable with these things or not. And, you know, you've heard me talking to Chip Simmons about this. Chip says the best tool for law enforcement in, you know, his entire career. Better than DNA, better than fingerprints. Eric Winstrom, same thing, although he, the chief of police, although he says he shares the same concerns. And I know Chip does too. And Bob Johnson, same thing. But cops often, because you hire them to be a hammer, right? You hire them to thwart crime. When they find something that thwarts crime, they're thrilled. And so they think, I'm hammering the nail. What's the problem? Well, there are other concerns besides solving crime, which is behind why we require unanimous jury convictions, which is why we require exclusionary rules for evidence, which is why we require searches. You can't incriminate yourself. There's all kinds of limits on crime fighting because we think there are some things more important than fighting crime. So there's a balancing act here to be had, and we're just trying to figure out, you know, where exactly do we land on that when it comes to these license plate readers. He talked about New Hampshire, how they have a law. Other states are working on this as well with regards to the LPRs and their usage. He says one of the issues, DeSantis says one of the issues is the state doesn't even get the information. It's all held locally, which is true. They are interconnected but not connected. You can't just go searching all the databases. They're controlled by the local agency, like Chief Winstrom has assured all of us repeatedly, that if somebody comes and asks for the information, they have to actually ask him for it, and he has to approve the request if it's outside of PPD. And if it's inside PPD, it goes, you know, there's key supervisors who are responsible for handling it. Well, the gathering and collection of the information is what some people are objecting to on its own, on the face of it. And I agree, that's problematic. The question is it worth, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is the crime-fighting capability, which is tremendous, worth it? And I think we're going to have conversations about things like, you know, how long is the data stored? You know, is it 30 days? Is it 7 days? Is it 3 hours? Is there a distinction to be made between exigent circumstances and emergencies like missing children as opposed to prosecuting, you know, drug crimes that happened a week ago? Murders versus car thefts. What if the car thefts are connected to drive-by shootings? Yeah, I mean, I suspect that it's not going to wind up being a ban on these things. I suspect that it's going to wind up being tight regulation on how they're used in the state of Florida. I could be wrong. You know, we have to have this conversation. Then again, Walton County, Their sheriff just recently persuaded their county commission to vote 5-0 to remove them from unincorporated county land. But that's different from state right of way. And, you know, like, it's who controls the place where the camera sits. Because right now they're typically on state roads a lot. And so they're in the right of way that's actually owned by the state, not even owned by the county or by the sheriff's office. So, again, there's lots of questions around this. And the governor was dealing with kind of all of this in his long answer to this question.
When I see, like, a police officer using this to track, like, an ex-girlfriend, I'm like, you know, what the hell's going on, you know, with this? So I think this has happened very quickly. I think people are right to be concerned.
Yeah, and again, he was – this was the most – anti-flock license plate reader comment that I think I have heard from a Republican anywhere, certainly in the state of Florida, and for it to come from the governor, even though, you know, he's not going to be the governor for very much longer, and of course the next legislature is going to be under Byron Donalds, most likely, or perhaps David Jolly, maybe, but either way, not under him, right? So his opinion maybe doesn't matter as much anymore. He's not a lame duck yet, but he's basically a lame duck based on the legislative schedule.
All the stuff online about how there's, I mean, I just, I don't want to be in a situation where these tech companies, a handful of tech companies, know everything about you and know where you're going. And I know they collect a lot as it is, but I think it's going to get a lot worse unless we have some protections for the people in Florida.
Yeah, and same concern.
But the only way it could be dealt with is legislatively.
That's right.
This is not something that, you know, it's something that's being implemented primarily at the local level, and you're going to need the legislature to provide protections for people.
Yeah, and I would expect, I mean, I would be surprised if we don't have a kind of preemption on this to the state. And so I would expect that would be the outcome. The only question is the shape of the preemption. So they're going to set rules for the entire state within which your local police departments and your sheriff's organizations, your sheriff's agencies have to function. There's going to be a lot of conversation between the sheriffs and law enforcement and the legislature and the governor's office. I would expect a lot of that because they're going to push back because, you know, they've been hired to fight crime, as Chip said, and this fights crime really, really well. Why would you hire me to do a job and I got a tool to do it and you take away the tool? Again, I don't think it's going to be we're going to take it away. I think we're just going to manage it a lot more strictly than it has been managed so far, which is not really any particular knock on, you know, it's not a knock. I don't intend it as one on, you know, Chip or Bob or, you know, Eric, although it predates Eric, the other Eric Goss, you know, I'm like, it just, they see it as a legal tool. It is legal. Under current law, it's legal. Whatever the socialists might say, it is not illegal. It is not a warrantless search. It is legal. At least it hasn't been ruled to be illegal or unconstitutional. So the question now is, given that, what is the state going to do? And, well, the state hasn't made a law against it. So it is, by definition, it is legal. The question is whether it's a good idea, and that's a political conversation.
Go after criminals, great. Let's all...
I'm sorry, this one first. He said, what should you do about it?
So what I would say is if it's something you're concerned about, then I think it's you should talk to the people running for office, particularly for the legislature, and see. And I know New Hampshire has done something, and so I'm in the process of reviewing that because I think that would probably be a good place to start for us here.
And you might see an executive order, I suppose, come out of the governor's office. What sort of authority he has without legislative justification, not clear. But you know, he says talk to your people that you're thinking about voting for. Find out what they think about this. You know, ask them and let them take a stand, and then you make your vote accordingly. And, of course, talk to your legislators who are elected because, again, legislative session next January or next March is going to be key to this.
Go after criminals, great. Let's all do that. But surveilling just regular Floridians' movements and how that data is used, you know, that's a bird of a different feather.
It is. And you know, I know one of the key points that gets made quite a bit is, well, it's legal for a police officer to surveil on a street corner, do exactly, and they're in the cars too, by the way. This is not like if you get rid of the flock LPRs, what goes on inside the cars, because the cars have LPRs too, right? The police car driving down the road is running plates all the time. Are those going to be okay? To what degree is that information connected to the rest of the database? I mean, these are all questions that people are starting to ask, and are you comfortable with that? And, you know, the answer often from law enforcement has been, well, look, A cop can stand on the corner and look at license plates. A cop can sit in their car and look at license plates and run license plates. There's no prohibition on any of that. Well, the response to that is, but maybe there should be. Maybe you should have to have probable cause before you run a plate. There's been a crime committed in the area. Might be a kind of a generalized probable cause. Again, what level of crime, what kind of emergency would justify? Because I don't think that we would be happy with having, if we knew and if we could afford it, and we hired 1,000 police officers to all sit in a car at key intersections and write down real quick, like, you know, every plate or take a photo of every plate and enter it into a database. If it were done by a physical police officer, would we be happy about that? I don't think we would, because even though it's legal under current law, that would accomplish the same thing as the LPRs do. And the argument has always been, well, you know, we could do it now if we had enough police. Yeah, but would we be upset about that? I think we would be. I think we should be, at least questioning it. Anyway, so big conversation coming, and the governor's comments were, to my mind, unexpectedly bold, frankly, on the topic, given his, you know, stance on the issue, and we'll see what comes. 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hear that? That's Alka-Seltzer, the sound of fast heartburn relief. Because when heartburn hits, you want something that works fast. Quick, Alka-Seltzer. Alka-Seltzer effervescent tablets start neutralizing stomach acid in seconds, so nothing works faster for heartburn relief. Next time, when that burning feeling comes on strong, don't wait. Quick, Alka-Seltzer. Try Alka-Seltzer. Use as directed.
You're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You've still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight illnesses like pneumococcal pneumonia and RSV. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine and can help protect you from getting really sick. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. See more at PfizerForAll.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Did you know? Economic development is not about slogans. It is about outcomes. Florida West Economic Development Alliance works to recruit and support businesses that generate high-wage jobs, significant capital investment, and long-term tax base growth. That means stronger public services and a more competitive Escambia County without raising taxes. Learn more at FloridaWestEDA.com.
Five-day outlook is calling for intense flooding, followed by the end of the world!
You don't need panic. You need information. News Radio
92.3. Gee, your hair smells terrific.
Here on News Radio 92.3, I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News. And if you're thinking about buying or selling a home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty are very effective at this. They sold 206 homes last year. That's 4 a week on average. And, you know, I talk about that a lot. Perhaps if you listen to me for a long time, you get tired of hearing it. But I just think it's an amazing number, given that, you know, you go back a decade and she was basically working in the news and then started a family. And, you know, she and her husband, who I know really well, are good friends, and did some other endeavors. And then, like, yeah, I think I can do real estate. And for those of us who knew Christina, you know, I mean, sure, a lot of people have the basic skills necessary to do well in real estate. But, you know, it's a question of whether it turns out. Holy smokes. You know, like, nobody would have predicted the level of success that she's had, you know, being the top residential realtor in the entire area with her team. And the level of experience and insight and professionalism and almost turning it into a science, like a formula, basically, for how to figure out how to sell and to buy these homes. It's just and she's such a delightful person. I mean, if you get to know her, you'll understand why she's such a good friend. But the expertise, when you want to sell a home, you want to sell it. You don't want to just put it up for listing and then hope and then go through the struggle of it not moving. Well, they move a lot of homes, and that gives them a lot of experience to know how to move yours and how to help you buy one if you need to. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty. Oh, my God. I don't know how much you have seen of the videos of this flood in Nepal, but it's I mean, it's horrific. It's everything, you know, sometimes you hear a story, you know, you hear me talking about it or you maybe read about it and it's one thing, but you know, as we all know, a picture is worth a thousand words. And in these cases, a video is worth every bit of digital ink that's been spilt on this. But you have 270 bodies have been recovered so far, with hundreds more missing, lots of Americans missing, a couple dozen, at least 30 or more. The New York Times actually this morning, so the Guardian has it at 270. The New York Times has it more than 1,000 missing. What you have is this kind of valley in Nepal, and all of a sudden you just see, it's like something out of a movie, and in the most horrific sense, this wall of mud and water coming down and overwhelming buildings and destroying towns and wiping out bridges and killing, you know, hundreds of people. And the original thought was it might have been an earthquake, because nobody could figure out where it all came from, why it was so sudden. And now the thinking is that it was a glacier collapse of some kind. So just be praying for first responders, be praying for families, be praying for, you know, it's going to be a long road to recovery for that entire area. And certainly there are some people who might be alive still that can be rescued.
Fox News. I'm Deborah Valentine. Closing arguments are scheduled to get underway today in the trial of Lindsay Clancy. She's the mother accused of killing her three children.
Prosecutors say the Massachusetts mother acted rationally and intentionally, murdering her three children inside the family's Duxbury home in January of 2023.
Fox's Molly Line reporting. The defense claims Clancy was suffering from postpartum psychosis. Meta will pay $18 billion to 29 states to settle a social media addiction lawsuit. Fox's Claudia Cowan has more from Oakland, California.
Meta does not admit wrongdoing in the settlement, but will now change how Facebook and Instagram operate for teens and make stronger efforts to flag and remove users under 13 years old.
Meta is also calling on rivals like TikTok and YouTube to implement similar restrictions. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31 right now, 75 degrees and partly cloudy. I'm Steve Taylor in for David Wayne on News Radio 92.3. In a sealed report, a Florida state grand jury found the DeSantis administration misappropriated about $10 million in taxpayer money by diverting funds from a Medicaid settlement to the Hope Florida Foundation, as reported from CBS News Miami. The panel finds that the money, which was meant for Hope Florida, the charity once headed by Casey DeSantis, was steered instead to fund the fight against marijuana legalization ballot measure. Investigators are tracing $4.75 million from a group which is called Save Our Society from Drugs straight to a PAC chaired by James Uthmeyer, who's now the state attorney general. The grand jury calls it misappropriation, but says there is not enough evidence to file criminal charges. More than 128,000 children in Florida are lacking access to child care. That's according to the Children's Movement of Florida. Here in Pensacola, the city is working to close that gap. Mayor D.C. Reeves this week celebrated the opening of the Alice S. Williams Center, a new child care facility for infants up to 2 years old. It's part of a citywide child care access program that Reeves launched about a year ago. Reeves tells Channel 3 that the goal is quality, affordable health care close to home.
Any mothers and fathers out there want to drop their child off in the best possible care that they can get, in the newest and safest building that they can have, and make sure that it's quality child care when they go to work.
The average annual cost of child care hit $13,184 last year. That's according to Child Care Aware of America. 60 veteran families in our area will not have to choose between paying a bill or buying groceries, at least not for the next 4 months. A new food assistance program for veterans launches today at 5 p.m. at Jubilee Church. It's a partnership between Feeding the Gulf Coast, Be the Miracle, and State Representative Michelle Salzman's office. Be the Miracle founder, Tim Chandler, told Channel 3 veterans give enough on the battlefield.
They have felt anxiety, they have felt fear, PTSD, anger, loss. They should never feel hunger. They felt hunger on the battlefield. They shouldn't feel it back home.
Families will get weekly deliveries free of charge for 4 months. About 40% of each box will have some fresh produce in there. Florida's four-month hunting, fishing, and camping sales holiday is kicking off on Tuesday, September 1st, runs through December 31st. Shoppers can skip sales tax on camping and hunting gear, including guns and ammunition, with no price cap on firearms, bows, or accessories. The holiday is part of the state tax package signed with the new budget and is expected to save shoppers millions statewide. Let's check that forecast from Channel 3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We do have a 70% chance of those showers and thunderstorms today, high near 89 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 75. For Friday, 50% chance of rain, high near 88 degrees. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 74. Heading into Saturday, 30% chance of rain, high near 89 degrees. And Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 75. Stay connected to Channel 3 News' First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Right now, 75 degrees in Pensacola, 79 in Gulf Breeze, and 77 in Milton at 5:35. Next news is at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
The City of Pensacola Parks and Recreation offers many ways to help you get out and play. Take a stroll in one of their 93 parks, rent a kayak or a paddle boat at the brand new Bayview Outdoor Pursuit Center, or participate in one of the many exciting programs happening at Play Pensacola's 11 resource centers. Tennis courts, pools, dance, camps, community events, and more. The only thing missing is you. For more, visit playpensacola.com or follow social media at Play Pecola Parks. It's time to get out and play.
Tune in today at 9:30 as Ray Palmer with Pensacola Sports will be the guest on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Pensacola Sports' focus has and always will be on education, inspiration, and participation in various team, individual, amateur, and professional sports activities. What events are coming up on the calendar? Tune in today at 9:30 as Pensacola Sports will be discussing those upcoming events on the calendar.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Hey, it is Christina Leavenworth.
I'm Dr. Ben McMillan with the Neal Clinic.
Hey, this is Delino with the Boot Store on Pine Forest Road.
What do these businesses have in common? They've trusted our years of marketing experience at ADX Communications.
I love radio advertising for my business, so I always love referring business over to ADX Communications for the best radio advertising out there.
We have advertised with Cat Country 98.7 over the past 10 years. Because we know radio works and Cat Country reaches our target audience.
I absolutely recommend radio to business owners. It's real, it's local, and it reaches people where they live and work.
To have your business become part of our success story, no matter if it's Cat Country 98.7, News Radio 92.3, Sports Radio Pensacola 99.1, Pensacola's Playlist 94.5, or the area's most robust digital platform, call us today. 850-262-6000. That's 850-262-6000. And let ADX go to work for you.
The primary election is over.
If you're looking at the city of Pensacola mayor race, D.C. Reeves has 51% of the vote. Alicia Trawick has 21% of the vote.
News Radio 92.3 full team coverage with Chris and Austin provided up-to-the-minute local and state election results.
I'm so happy to welcome David Williams into the show. Hey, David, how you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
I'm looking at your numbers. You have 59.12% of the vote.
News Radio 92.3.
I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Every Wednesday about this time, we talk to Mayor D.C. Reeves. He is the mayor of Pensacola. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Always good to have you. Okay, so I know we're going to talk a lot about Birdon today because you got a lot of stuff happening, big meeting this afternoon. But I have one kind of oddball sort of question related to trees. And, you know, feel free to say, huh, okay, so I wouldn't be surprised. Somebody made a comment, and it's not a new idea, that trees on private property are, of course, owned by the person who owns the property, but they also represent a something of a public infrastructure for aesthetics, for pollution, for shade,
for water
mitigation. You know, you're very well, this is the tension, right? We want to save our trees. We don't want to infringe on property rights. How do we solve this problem? Why don't we compensate people for having trees? You know, it's one thing to punish them for getting rid of them, but what if somehow or other people got a rebate on their taxes or a discount on their property taxes based on their tree canopy or their diameters of tree trunk size? It seems like that would be a way to sort of somehow thread the needle between, yes, it's private property, but there's also public benefit.
I mean, listen, in theory, I don't know that you would get major philosophical opposition to something like that. Of course, you know, where my head goes as the operator of the city is how in God's name are you going to be able to track that and who plants a new tree and not. So logistically, I imagine that would be a heavy lift. If you said you had to figure that out next week, you'd probably start like at a very high level of like a certain size tree of a certain age.
Right.
You know, that it has to be self-reported and verified, you know. So I it's probably more procedural than it would be that, you know, someone wouldn't want to do that. You know, meaning if it mitigated X gallons of stormwater or more based on its size. But here's what I'd tell you. Remember, all of our tree ordinances are ultimately an unfunded mandate from the council. And what I mean is our first arborist that we ever hired was with ARPA money. So our administration we've creatively figured out how to keep one, and frankly, with new rules, very important rules, ones that I support. There's administrative costs that really pulls us behind, and you know, Amy Toodles mentioned that in budget meetings previously. So I guess that's where I would lean to is love the idea in general. It's, you know, how do you execute it?
Sure.
And you know, is it executable? You know, so that would be my longer way of saying, you know, that's interesting, just like you said.
And you know what? A lot of times that's all I'm kind of trying to accomplish is, you know, maybe there's something to be thought about here. And, you know, maybe it's a pilot program or, you know, first of its kind. Maybe it's been done elsewhere. I don't know. But I've been thinking about this problem for a long time, and that's something that occurred to me. I thought, I'll ask the mayor. He's the kind of guy that would think about this. You have a big meeting going on today related to Burdon, right? After the, $9 million the governor came in and made a big announcement. What's happening today?
Yeah, so we actually have our workforce summit. Burdon is obviously a catalyst of that, but American Magic will be there, ST Engineering, Offshore Inland. What we're really looking at is this shipbuilding and advanced manufacturing summit to say, me and you have talked about some of the issues that with ST over the years of you know, that they ran into employer issues a few years ago. And how I've really assessed it is if we had to do over again, we would have been doing this 10 years ago, which is, hey, we've got this big employer coming in. How do we ensure that our Pensacolians and these companies have the best chance for success? So today at 2:30 at Hagler Basin, it is streaming, by the way. If you watch any of the agenda conference council meetings, it'll be streaming online if you want to check it out. But we have about 53 confirmed guests, and this is everybody from UWF and Florida State, Northwest Florida State, Pensacola State. So we have Georgetown, all of those institutions. We have the employers who are going to come say, hey, here's what we need. And we're going to find the good part is with both MRO work at the airport and what Burdon and American Magic and Offshore Inland do, there's a pretty robust middle of the Venn diagram. There are some very similar needs across all of those different industries. And then we'll have Secretary Kelly will be here from Florida Commerce. The Education Commission leadership will be there. So this is a high school discussion as well. This isn't just trade school and this isn't just state college. So it's a short kickoff to what should be a long and very intentional conversation in our community to say, we've got 3,500 jobs alone between ST Engineering and Burdon, just them. And of course, we expect more employers to follow suit. So let's make sure that we are as proactive as possible in making sure that our Pensacolians can get these jobs and that these companies want to be here for the long term because we can build the talent pool for them.
How much of what we're going to be doing with Burdon is a lessons learned from what was a little bit bumpy and still is to some degree with ST Engineering. I mean, I feel like the workforce training component of that is a piece that we continue to try to play catch up on because, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing and we learned along the way that we didn't know and what we did know we shouldn't have known. And, you know, now we're kind of, I mean, we're making headway, but they're, you know, building three and I think four sure. is on its way. And there's like stuff is happening at the airport. Every time I drive down 12th, I see it. So how much of what's happening today and what will be happening is a byproduct of what we've learned from that?
Yeah, from the local level, it certainly is. But I think there's other national factors that are happening. Obviously, the Trump administration's priority on shipbuilding.
Yeah.
So if you saw the headlines a couple weeks ago, the Department of Labor federally gave the state of Florida $40 million specific for shipbuilding, workforce training. So we've got the most shovel-ready shipbuilding project in the state, maybe in the United States right now. So I think it's two converging things to your question, Andrew. One is, yes, it's lessons learned here locally. But we also are fortunate that we're at this perfect converging time of such massive need and demand and priority of shipbuilding specifically
or
in this country that we're just kind of at the right place, right time to be able to have significantly more resources, even if we went back in the time machine 10 years ago and did a little more intentional job with ST, that would have been good. But we actually are kind of striking right now at a perfect time in our state and in our country, because we know what the massive shipbuilding demand is, not just in Pensacola, but in Mobile, in Mississippi, in Panama City. So we have competitors to be successful in this. And so I really think it's both of those things kind of happening at the same time.
No, I agreed. And all of that. Superfund sites have been in the news with the city of Pensacola recently. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there are two very different stories at two different Superfund sites. But again, you tell me if I'm wrong. One is the proposal to have the inland port, which I believe is at the Midtown on Highway, you know, the Palafox site, that one. And then the other one is the mitigation work that has now been delayed, but we've been waiting for a long time on the phase one, if I remember correctly, of the American Creosote site. So tell me what's going on with these projects, because it's easy to get confused over which one is which and what they all mean.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first Midtown Commerce Park, that's really a what-if conversation with the county. The county ultimately controls those 30-ish acres of the Midtown Commerce Park. We are looking at property contiguous to that on the private side that's larger. And really, Commissioner May, to his credit, said, hey, whatever, when this huge displacement took place, We promised jobs to come back in. Well, I couldn't think of a more golden opportunity for job creation for Midtown Commerce Park than lopping on to a potentially 90 acre inland port with a rail spur where Burdon would move hundreds of jobs the day it opened.
Yeah.
Much less all of those other ancillary companies that are going to be moving in. There's interest from GE putting their nacelles there. There's interest from Blue Wind. There's lots of enthusiasm, both with local employers as well as federal agencies. EDA is very optimistic about this. So the military is very optimistic about this. So there's a lot of momentum. And so the Midtown Commerce Park coming in and compounding the impact of that inland port, I mean, I couldn't think of a better job creation opportunity. So that's really in the exploration phase of Bay County. Is this something you want to do? ACW, we were fortunate. And this is why
that's the American Creosote work site by the down by the Corinne Jones in that vicinity. Anyway, go ahead. Just for people who don't know the acronym.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. Kind of at the corner of Brancas and Maine.
There you go.
See those fences there if you're ever going to or from the Navy base. But ultimately 18 acres there and has been a Superfund site since 2 years before I was born. And we're really proud of the fact that we finally have gotten the funding moving here. There's been about the same amount of funding since 2021. With that, like every project, the delta gets bigger and bigger of what it actually costs. So our friends at EPA and I made two specific trips to Washington, D.C. just on this issue. And they granted us another $8.9 million to fund the delta of phase one. And we expect to get a significant portion of funding for phase two. Maybe not all of it. It's about a $60-plus million phase. But we actually expect any time now to hear about some good news on phase two.
So oh, great.
What that means for you, bottom line, is we were looking at July. We're on the EPA schedule. The city is not doing the construction, the remediation, none of that. This is all going to be done federally. But we're expecting There was an update given to the neighborhood, I believe, last night, but it should be in any week now where you're going to start to see yards extracted and remediated and things like that down in the Sanders Beach area.
Oh, very good. I mean, that's all very exciting stuff. By the way, we're talking to Mayor D.C. Reeves, and I do want to remind you that this interview is brought to you by Lambert Transfer and Storage. Choose the team with a legacy. Lambert Moving Systems. Visit GoLambertTeam.com. You and I have talked many times about the airport, and we didn't really have a chance to talk about this since the announcement of a $6 million infrastructure grant for the new terminal?
Yeah, we've got that. We've gotten the half a million to redo the where you go pick people up up front and how the traffic flows.
Oh, okay.
What is
the plan for that? What is the intended long-term change for that?
There's some challenges, kind of legacy challenges, and it's things you don't think about even when you go use our airport, like, for example, where the rental cars have to be cleaned and dropped off and come from to get back into the garage. They have to go circumnavigate the entire airport almost,
okay,
for example. It's all those little things. It's just our curb isn't right for our capacity, or it's not operating as efficient as it could. So that's going to be a study that will allow it. So it'll be great for passengers, but also kind of great for the logistics that you may not notice about the airport, that make sure that we're moving people and we're eliminating traffic and all of those things.
I assume it's largely a byproduct of the fact that we were a small town with a small airport, and now we're a middle-sized town with a middle-sized growing airport. And, you know, sometimes the conversion from the one to the other has some challenges attached to it.
That's right. So, I mean, and so our airport team's doing an awesome job. We were joking. I think there's like 10 items on the next council agenda that are all, grant-related, acceptances, votes from the council. So those are all good items to have. Hey, help us approve getting all this money in to get this airport going.
I did hate to have Matt Coughlin have to wade through all the conversations about curfew and everything else the last time around and all of that nonsense before he could give his, 18 seconds of talking or whatever, but okay, fair enough. that's just kind of how things work.
Draw the short straw, I guess, if you're
no kidding.
After all those things.
Tomorrow night, first Division I football game. You're a longtime sports fan, big supporter of UWF. Yeah. Thoughts? And the basketball game, the FSU basketball game that's coming too, both.
Yeah, there's old News Journal archive columns from me from 15 years ago talking about the value of going to Division I. This was when it was debated pre-football, of course.
But, yeah.
So even better now, Division I football, we're excited for that. They're going to play. Of course, I'm an FSU alum, and it was also announced that FSU basketball is going to play a regular season game over here,
right,
with the Bay Center. I'm very excited about that on the Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend. It's great. I love seeing this enthusiasm, and there's really no replacing the enthusiasm of playing Division I and playing against those teams and just having those fan bases come into Pensacola that you know. So really excited for the entire university, for the athletic department, and really looking forward to this season.
No, it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait to watch it. All right, we always like to end with a lightning round. Quick questions for you. First thing, Oreos have come out with some recent flavor interesting ideas, including chicken and waffle Oreos. Would you try them, and is there a flavor of Oreo you'd like to see them make?
Man, I don't know about meat on cookies. I'd probably go no on that.
You don't put bacon on your maple donut?
You got me second guessing myself. Yeah, I would do that.
All right, fair enough.
Well, there's so much fat and sugar that goes out of the donut. It's not as
well. That's why you got to round out the food groups. Okay. I'll let you pass on that one. Fruit served at room temperature or at cold refrigerated temperature?
Preferably cold. crunchy and cold. That's how I like fruit.
Fine, whatever. Okay, last one. Here's a chance for you to redeem yourself, although I think the majority was with you on the cold fruit one. When you open a yogurt or a pudding and you've got that little bit on the lid, do you lick it, spoon it, or throw it out?
I actually take the top and then edge the side of it so it goes into the container that I'm eating.
Okay, so you slide it along the container so that it goes back in and you eat it with the spoon.
Exactly. Now, I don't know, you know, it sounds like you might have do it like the way I did it when I was 9 years old. I'm not sure, you know.
Oh, yeah, I'm a lid licker. I'm 100% a lid licker. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have time to be like
proper for that, Andrew.
Being all proper and
scrape it in.
I'm not so dainty with my lids, but I think you're not alone in that. D.C. Reeves, the mayor of Pensacola, as always, sir, thank you for the time. We'll look forward to talking again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
You know, as art imitates life or life imitates art, yesterday I was opening up the Buffalo Wild Wings mango habanero sauce that I had bought specifically because I was going to make wings. And I had the little foil piece. It's, you know, like 3/4 of an inch in diameter. And I had it and it had a little bit on the top. And I'm like, do I scrape it back in or do I just lick it? Licked it. Well, it turned out that's a mistake because that sauce is so hot. It's so good. But it's meant to be spread out over the wing, not just, you know, but, you know, I did not let it go to waste. Like PJ would have.
You know it.
5:54, I'm Andrew McKay.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. The Subaru Lot to Love event is going on now at Anderson Subaru, which brings special summer savings to some of our most in-demand Subaru models, Ascent, Outback, and Crosstrek. Right now, get 0.9% financing for 75 months on Ascent models with flexible seating for up to 8 passengers. Or how about 1.9% APR financing for 75 months on the completely redesigned Outback? That's 75-month financing on Ascent and Outbacks. Or get 2.9% APR financing for 72 months on the versatile Subaru Crosstrek. Low rates and long terms on the most reliable and most loved cars around. Discover new places to love during the Subaru A Lot to Love event. Going on now through August 31st at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Subaru for you, Subaru for you. Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
The average checking account pays less than a 0.1%. Pennair Credit Union's high yield checking, 5.05% APY. That's more than most savings accounts and 70 times more than any old checking account. Make every deposit count. Learn more at penair.org/checking.
Federally insured by NCUA, Pennair's high-yield checking account pays up to 5.05% annual percentage yield on balances up to $10,000 with e-statements and a monthly ACH deposit of $250 or more.
Tune into Transcending the Money Myth, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than just investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Transcending the Money Myth, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sunday at 1 p.m. Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC, registered advisors. The Pensacola housing real estate market has been crazy for the past few years. How do you know when to buy or sell? You'll need an expert to help you. Tune into the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 9 a.m. right after Pensacola Morning News to hear real estate expert Christina Leavenworth with Leavenworth Realty discuss current real estate conditions. That's today at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WER-TV, News Radio team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
How much do you know about Dyson?
I have detailed files.
All-time favorite movies, and such a great soundtrack. It wouldn't have been the same without it. 5:57 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Oh, I was just doing a little bit more work on the whole, you know, Hope Florida Foundation sending the grand jury report that has come out that has essentially said that everything that Alex Andrade has told us, and you've heard him talk about it on my show many times, and, you know, he was the one who originally unearthed this problem, the money that went to these PACs overseen by James Uthmeyer, who actually coordinated the release of the funds to them and, you know, helped them write the application so the money could go into a political action committee and be used to fight the marijuana amendment instead of going back to the state like it should have gone. And the grand jury discovered and has basically said, everything was done wrong here. You know, everything Alex has said is basically right, but we can't prosecute. We don't have any ability to prosecute it. And do you remember that this went to the floor of the legislature? And on the House floor, they were actually having a conversation about this. And Fentrese Driscoll, a Democrat, basically, this was the one to prevent transfer of payments without notifying the legislature, is how I remember the bill was written. And Alex Andrade, you know, basically, she said, and all the Democrats were like, yeah, Alex is right. And all the Republicans voted down the bill. Good Lord, people. Like, the grand jury literally said the only way to solve this problem in the future is that if the legislature will do something, and the legislature's like, I don't know. I don't see anything here. Nothing here. Yeah, not our issue. It's just so disappointing. 437-1620. You know, you can only tell people so many times. I mean, you can only show them Mike Cusack so many times, and they still elect him without opposition. You know, I can only do so much, folks. 437-1620. Now, this is a weird story. The Florida State Board of Governors is looking at a rule that requires state colleges and universities to have a rule on AI for how it can be used and how it can be policed and for creativity and plagiarism and all that kind of stuff. Do not, I'm going to pardon my ignorance. Do they not already have such policies? I mean, maybe they don't. Maybe it's just kind of been, you know, so difficult to get a handle on that nobody's got such a policy yet. But pardon my ignorance. I don't know whether PSC and UWF or FIU and FAMU and Central Florida have policies on this stuff. But, I mean, my God, you should. You really, really should have some kind of policy.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.